All right, what creeps have you been listening to this week?
Well, welcome back
to the
creep dive.
Do you know what we've dropped that was really good in one of the episodes?
What
the
was
harmony.
It?
Why did you cut it out?
No, we only did it one time.
Yeah. How did it sound?
Terrible.
Really, really good.
Terrible.
As what were we saying? I can't even remember.
It should be our thing.
We harmonized the creep dive as if it was like the old MTV logo.
Creep dive.
Really? Oh, well, it made me feel unwell.
No, it's really good.
Like unsettling.
It's going to sound extra special when I auto-tune it.
Ah, nice.
No, I'll do
did
that
you
for
do
us.
That to the last one?
No,
such a
it
hacker.
Was actually perfect.
It was just perfect. Just as it was. Just like us, ladies. No new year, new me. The Instagram has spoken.
Are you trying? My Instagram is so intense these days. I'm afraid to fucking look at it because if I look at something,
I hate it all. I think we should just switch off the internet and be done with it now. Just turn it off.
That would radically interfere with our premise
this
podcast.
I'm struggling with that. I'm trying to think about how we can turn off the internet but keep on podcasts and keep our research available.
Depends on what you're doing. Like if you know.
I just think like people should not. There's certain people they've noticed over the last couple. You know, it's so intense at Christmas and New Year's of people posting.
Very
just,
frightening.
There's
very
a lot of people whose internet.
There's a lot of feelings, Cassie.
Yeah, they should just be restricted.
A lot of feelings.
Take them back.
It's time to feel some feelings about our stories. Who's doing the longing?
I got the longy.
What way do you want to work this, ladies?
Well,
how's yours, Cass?
I haven't actually done my homework. I'm here to listen, observe, and comment.
Oh my gosh!
That's it. And typically, if you, how many episodes
it's
is
typically
this?
Typically, you.
Is this
is
the fourth
episode?
This is episode five.
Yeah.
Well, my.
It's technically your turn to do the long one, Jay.
Okay, I'll do a long yarn. today,
you can tell a story, and then next week's episode we'll unravel all the lies in it.
I can't believe that even just off the top of your head, you can't come up with a single thing.
I know that
thing.
I do, but I have that really, really bad, really bad flu brain where I keep forgetting things. I've left loads of things behind. I've lost my keys. I went down to the shop the other day to buy something that I was specifically told to get. I had to go over to Nutgrove to get it and I got the wrong thing.
That's fascinating.
I'm just, yeah.
Is that your story?
Flu brain.
Are we here for the creeping dive into your flu brain? Come on, you must have something weird.
Let's go for
we'll
the
come
long
back
first.
She
we'll
might
long
think of
first.
Something listening to us. You go first.
Well,
go
my
first.
One is, you're not going
to
like this,
us
Cass.
In. Just the tip first.
Go on. Is this going to be disgusting?
Is it more oral fellation?
No.
Are you going to tell the Ricky Martin story again?
I'm not telling the Ricky Martin story.
That's
did I say it, Ricky Martin?
To, if you want to hear the first telling of the
Ricky
Martin
story. Head on over.
Head on over to Mother of Pod for this week's episode.
Peanut butter and ghee.
Say no more.
Let's say no more. Not the Indian. However,
I'm trying to think of
my
a
story,
single Ricky Martin song to sing that to the tune of.
My story began in my head. I was like, well, what am I going to do for the creep dive? You know the way you troll through. You're like, ba, ba, ba. It's in there already. You just need to decide on the weird story and
like
go
a
research.
It's like a Rolodex of weird tabs that you've had open over the past kind of.
Bingo.
10 years.
That's exactly what it's like. So I was doing some shit and I was like, Sinead O'Connor. That story, of course. And so I was on my phone looking. I spent about 5 minutes. And I was like, oh, I must got the wording wrong here. I can't find any of this shit that I remember. Kept scrolling. I can find none of this. So what I'm going to tell you is what I remember.
Which is
right.
So going to be so libelous.
But I did think of that. And I was thinking in my head, is there a way to preface this with, this is a story I remember Sinead telling about Prince. Now, I am sure I fucking read this. I'm sure that it appeared on Sinead O'Connor's official Facebook page. That's how, I'm sure it did. So I went back to try and find that. Her
none,
page is
none
gone.
Of that. Those assurances don't actually
just
sound very legitimate. But anyway, go on.
Hey,
just because
you
I
have
said
my
it.
So word.
It's not liable.
That this wasn't a lucid dream.
Well, all I'm saying is she wrote it. Mm-hmm. It's disappeared. What I did find when I started looking was that Prince's estate they're suing her. Because not because of this story. But because of a different thing, she said. She apparently, she said to the police in the States, she confirmed that Prince was a heavy drug user. Right.
Okay.
That's not my story.
Okay.
It does involve Prince. Then I was talking, Dan came in from work and I was like, Dan, you remember that Sinead O'Connor story? And he said, yeah, yeah, yeah. The one with the pillowcase. And I was like, yeah, I'm Prince, yeah? And he was like, yeah. And he said, it's from her autobiography. And I was like, class, I'll just find that. Doesn't exist. I think this case that they're suing her, right? I think they've cleared the decks. I think it's halted her biography. And they've taken obviously the original post. Here we go.
Okay.
As you know or may not know, the song, what's it called again? Nothing Compares to You was written by Prince.
Yes.
Now.
Okay.
So Sinead obviously sang the song, had a massive hit.
Yes.
Huge hit, in fact. And if you believe what Sinead said, it made Prince an awful lot of money at a time that he didn't have a lot of money. So he should be grateful and thankful. And they should have gotten on like a house on fire.
And he wrote the song, so it's deserved.
Well, I mean, whatever. I'm sure she paid for it or whatever shit. What?
I don't know enough about it.
So she was invited then out to his mansion.
Yes.
It must have been a couple of years after the song was a massive hit, because a huge fight broke out between the two of them. I'll paint the scene, right? This is Minnesota, I think, is where he lived.
Okay.
Because Sinead did a hot press interview about this. Well, it wasn't about this fight, but this fight came up. And I can find the first half of the story in this hot press interview and through a YouTube video interview that she did. And she tells a bit of the fight. But what I can't find is the middle section of the fight, which is the bit that I remember.
Okay.
So Sinead arrives for the first time. I don't know whether it was a first time meeting. It must have been, because they had a conversation about the song. And Prince said to her,
I just feel like they're two of the most awkward pop stars that have ever been.
Correct.
And imagine,
like, I wouldn't necessarily want to be at that party.
To be a guest at that party.
I forgot an important fact. So Sinead arrived to this enormous house.
Wait, is there a fact in the story?
Sorry, no, I should retract that. I forgot that, whatever. So she arrives up to the door of the mansion.
Yeah.
And the door creaks open.
Oh my God.
And a shadowy,
there's a monkey butler.
Igor-like, uh-huh, kind of butler-esque type man answers the door.
Mm.
And he doesn't say much and escorts her into the house. And she's like, oh, I guess he's works for Prince. He must be the butler or whatever.
Is he cool? Satan?
Turns out this was Prince's brother called Dwayne, who went on to
Prince's brother's called Dwayne.
Yeah. D-U-A-N-E or something.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Dwayne. Is that weird?
Well, just like Dwayne and Prince. And Dwayne.
Well, what's Prince's real name? Francis or something?
I don't know. You tell us.
So anyway, you're in the mood. Dwayne lets her in, right? And she's like, who's this guy? He's a bit weird. Yeah. Whatever.
Yeah.
He's just kind of skulking around. He doesn't talk to her, basically. And she's like, okay, this is strange. And then starts kind of being there in the house. And a conversation about the song comes up. And Prince, and she's like, isn't it great? Or how well it's done and blah, blah, blah. And Prince,
how I've revived said your career,
to her, I would appreciate if you didn't use bad language. I feel like during your interviews and things, don't do that. And she said, fuck you.
Ah, yeah.
And so all fucking hell broke loose.
Right.
Now, the fighting, she said, was going on. And they were in the kitchen. She described the kitchen with an enormous island in the middle of the kitchen. And Prince was making drinks. And they were sort of having this awkward, fighty conversation. And this is the bit that I can't find anywhere. This is the bit in the original Facebook post that she wrote. Then Prince goes away, has a conversation with Dwayne. Prince comes back and Dwayne appears at the door of the kitchen. And there was a silver tray with two pillows on it.
Right.
And Sinead's like, what the fuck is that?
Pillow
and Prince
fight.
Goes, we're going to have a pillow fight. That's the worst. I don't know what Prince fucking sounds like. In my head, he sounds like kind of
Kim Kardashian.
Well, no, more kind of Michael Jackson, like a upper tone.
We're going to have a pillow fight.
Exactly.
Correct.
Very good.
Yeah. Do it again.
We're going to have a pillow fight, Sinead.
Hey, Sinead.
It's kind of breathy.
Totally, right. But they were sort of fighting as well. So she was like, what the fuck? Okay. Took her pillow. And Prince took his. And they sort of
started fighting with a pillow. But
it's almost as if you were there.
Sinead was like,
you're like, you're furrowing your brow. No, hear me. Like almost,
I'm just trying to remember the details.
No, right? Because this
of that unusual night.
So they're pillow fighting in the kitchen with Dwayne standing in the doorway. And Prince gives her a wallop with the pillow. And Sinead's like, there's fucking something in the end of that pillowcase. Like, and he goes at her again. And she's like, what the fuck is, there's like a book or something hard in this pillowcase. There's no, I don't have that in my pillow. What's going on? She freaks the fuck out. She gets out of, with her. This is where the factoids kick in again. Because this bit she talks about. She leaves the house at 5:30 a.m. Which is a long ass time to be there fighting with Prince about saying, fuck you.
Yeah.
To opens the door of the mansion and there's a limo there. And that limo is there to bring guests home. Your man, though, the limo driver, is asleep. And Sinead's like, I don't want to fucking wake him up. This is awkward. Then Prince takes umbrage with the fact that she doesn't want to wake this guy up. And they have another scrap. And she describes running around the car, him chasing her, her spitting at him. I can't remember exactly what happens then. Then I think she, then the next bit of the story jumps to her running down the hill, Prince in the limo chasing her. She ends up calling into a neighbor's house for help. And that's where the story ends. Now, Prince's estate have obviously denied any of this shit happened. But there's something in the way she wrote that post.
The ring of truth?
Yes. So then I ended up on this Reddit thread. I think it's prince.org. Mm-hmm. And people going now, back and forth, right? Talking about how, yeah, there was loads of accusations about Prince being violent against women. And there was various different stories in the press. But anyway, what do you think of that?
There's a lot of beeping that's going to have to go on in this. Because if Prince is a...
they're denying everything. This is just hearsay. I don't fucking know if it's
this
true.
This is just
hearsay. It's just something Sinead said or didn't say. I can't quite remember.
It's just a half remembered.
And it was her half fucking remembering it as well. So by the time it got to me.
It's 1/8 remembered.
But isn't it an amazing story?
Well, it is bizarre for sure.
Well, I guarantee, you'll find easily parts of that story. It's just a pillowcase section I couldn't find. But that really captured my imagination.
That's the real bit. Like the fact that they were on the tray and everything.
Yeah. Dwayne. And she figured out it was his brother. She was like, what the fuck?
Prince's name, by the way, given name, was Prince.
How the fuck could you call one baby Dwayne?
Dwayne and one Prince.
What was the rest of his siblings called? There was a few of them.
I'm just looking. There's the siblings aren't. There's a Tyka Nelson, who's a sister.
Tyka.
Yeah.
Anyway, there you go.
I don't know about this Dwayne character.
I fully believe that the madness in that house carried on. Like, I'm sure they... do you know what happened, I'd say? They were mad out of it, the pair of them.
Absolutely.
Absolutely mad out of it.
But it doesn't
We've come this far. Let's go all the way. They were probably absolutely off their tits and loads of narcotics.
Yeah.
That's Prince, P-R-I-N-S-E.
Cassie, are you goading me? Is this none of this shit going to end up in it? Because it's a hard... This is a brilliant story.
Oh, the poor woman. I just feel like she's... That's dark, isn't it?
Yeah.
Jen, I'm sorry.
None of that can go in.
On the 14th of November 2014, the independent.ie published an article called "I Told Him to Fuck Off."
Yeah, it doesn't have anything
O'Connor
about the
reveals
pillowcases.
She had punch up with Prince.
Yeah, I read it, but
there's no pillowcase bit. But there
your
is
your fave detail,
and the Dwayne section is completely gone as well.
There's enough detail there to suggest that it's
true.
We can use it. We can use it.
Yeah.
Okay. So,
'twas the night before Christmas.
My story is about the tragic death
of the world's slowest talker.
Dana Deer. Mother to 11 children.
Jesus.
And also, my story is about why Dana had to die.
Oh, Sophie.
That was good.
Very thanks. Good. And off the cuff now, I wasn't.
Yeah.
That's how fast I write a clickbait headline,
very
guys.
Slow delivery. Yes. I could see.
That's
because
I was making it up as I was going along.
Oh, I could see the cogs turning.
The tension. I liked
you gotta
it.
Build the tension. Okay. So, yeah. That was my top line.
Okay. We're in. We're in.
Okay. So, Dana Deer was married to John, nicknamed J.S. Deer. And they were from Saskatchewan in Canada, Canada. And basically, they have like all the makings of just like a golden couple. He was an officer of the Royal Canadian Mounted Police, a Mountie, mm-hmm. which is quite sexy. Exciting because they don't exist anywhere else in the world. And sexy. Anyway.
What was that program that used to have Mount? Was it called Mountie?
Mounties.
Do you remember that?
Yeah.
It was like a sitcom.
I think I'm just...
Never mind.
Okay. Anyway. And she was, it's quite a noble profession, she was a trauma surgeon.
Ah.
At a hospital, obviously. Not like...
Just kind of a freelance trauma surgeon. Yeah, no, I'm self-employed at the moment. You're like, oh yeah, are you?
And they also had a very busy household, 10 kids.
How could you? I thought it was 11.
Well, Dana was pregnant with her 11th child.
Oh, Jesus.
In 2012.
Darkness.
Also, of their 10 children, a few of whom were twins. I can't nail down how many of them were twins, but
who
they
cares?
Had some twins.
Like, were they even named? You just run clear out of names. You'd be like, who fucking, what are you? Who doesn't matter?
You, that one. Yeah. There.
Amazing.
You've got the one with the big forehead. So that's how you kind of differentiate them by that
name. They were Catholics. No contraceptive people.
Yeah. I just am like, just getting them all out.
They probably had dogs as well.
Amid training for surgeon practice out in the garage.
Sorry, I forgot. Yeah.
Sterilizing the garage. No, she did work in hospital.
But I mean, that's a lot of maternity leave.
Oh, yeah.
Do you know what I'm saying? So how much actual time would she have been there?
Yeah.
What age was she when she died? Pregnant, young enough to be pregnant.
In her 30s. Also,
sorry, she had 11 children and she was in her 30s and she was oh, this can't be right.
She had 10 kids. Now remember, still, a few of them were twins. Now, right. They also, the Deers did have some tragedy in their lives. So their 5-year-old Cliff, who's nicknamed Eli, his sort of middle name was Elias, he had an ongoing battle with cancer.
Oh God, okay.
So he's 5 years old.
What year are we talking?
2012.
Okay.
So in 2012, he was like on his fourth round of treatment.
These guys had an insanely difficult life.
Yeah, yeah. And so like they'd actually set up a lot of like a big online presence.
Okay.
For their son Eli, who they kind of nicknamed Warrior Eli.
Yeah.
And I suppose they'd like basically really entered into the kind of cancer support community online that was kind of around at the time, still is, of course. And Warrior Eli, their page, actually started to get a lot of notice.
Yeah.
And, you know, they would kind of do things. Lots of people got really supportive and kind of followed his journey, followed their journey. They'd kind of post updates of, you know, his
progress,
like,
and treatment,
his medication, his treatment progress, drawings he'd done, and lots of stuff like their family life as well and things like that. And they even, like, some people who were so kind of invested would contact, and they struggled, like, loads and loads of friendships through this kind of community. And other parents whose children were in similar circumstances and things like that. And it was just like a huge kind of support network. And they would send out care packages from Eli to some of his kind of biggest supporters that would like have a wristband that they kind of had made that said Warrior Eli. And then maybe some of his like drawings or his artwork. Mm. And they'd send that out to some of their like most supportive people. And then on Mother's Day in 2012, the Facebook page posted a distressing message. Urgent prayers needed. So Dana Deer's father got on to say that she was fighting for her life. And
Dana,
the mother.
But used the son's page to...
Because they had like hundreds of thousands of followers.
This better not be going where I think it's going.
And so they needed prayers. She's 35 weeks pregnant at this point.
Okay.
She's just been airlifted to the very hospital where she works as a surgeon. She was supposed to be on shift that night. And she was... in a head-on collision with an out-of-control speeding car.
What the okay. Jesus.
So then, JS, her husband, goes onto the Warrior Eli page to give them an update. So, he writes in his post, "Turning on my computer this morning and seeing almost every post on my newsfeed with pictures of my wife and prayer requests for her has been one of the most humbling experiences I've ever had. I'm not a religious person at all. I don't even particularly like the idea of prayer, but I thank every single one of you for your kind thoughts and concern."
Not religious.
"Last night at 12:02 a.m., I lost the love of my life. I lost my wife, the mother of my children, and my best friend. She fought so hard to cling to life." He goes on to detail how they basically managed to keep her going until she could deliver a perfect, as he says, baby girl, Evelyn Danica, born just 40 minutes before his wife died. 5 pounds, 5 ounces, 17 inches long. "Evie has a little bit of swelling in her face, but other than that, she's perfectly healthy and absolutely beautiful. She didn't even need any help with oxygen or anything at birth." The post goes on. There is, at the time of this screen grab, there was hundreds and hundreds of comments. And naturally.
On Facebook.
And is this still there? Like, did you found this screen grab or did you take this screen grab?
I found this screen grab. I didn't take it.
It's about to get darker.
Mm-hmm.
Are you going to tell us that this woman, the surgeon with 11 kids, isn't real?
Is any of this real?
This is so distressing.
I actually feel sick. Do you as well?
This is like the anxiety I feel about these people who make up fictitious people on the internet and like give them really complex lives.
Like do whatever you want. With sick children and car accidents. This idea of luring people in who are grieving themselves or have sick children themselves is beyond. All right, we don't even fucking know what's happening.
Sorry, we are.
I know.
Well,
basically, I just feel ill.
The feelings you're experiencing right now, their followers were experiencing on like a huge like.
So was there some much suspicion that
wider level? No. Okay. Initially, so many people were following the story.
Yeah, obviously like gripped
yeah. and hoping. Well, because for starters, there was a long gap between like urgent prayers needed and then the news that Dana hadn't made it, but that the baby had made it.
Okay.
So people were gripped. Exactly. And one such person who was gripped was a woman in Chicago called Taryn Wright. Now, Taryn was recuperating at home in her parents' house at the time because she had had a hip surgery. She was actually a futures trader and she was just laid up.
A lot of time in her hands.
And because I suppose she was just recovering from a hospital stay and things like that, she kind of like found herself in this kind of world.
Yeah.
And she had kind of started to follow this family on mm-hmm. Facebook.
Okay.
And so she had watched the whole saga of the mm-hmm. urgent prayers needed and then the announcement of the death.
What tipped her off?
And well, what tipped her off was that it wasn't being reported anywhere. And like the outpouring on Facebook was
big.
Massive.
What numbers are we? So we're talking 2012.
2012. So things were teeny bits more back then.
We're not talking millions of views.
No, but we're talking like tens of thousands probably.
Enough to
certainly. But we're probably in
a local news station to pick up.
Well, we're probably in the era of online sites reporting on.
Well, we're in 2012 and I think say things like.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a story. You'd pick it up if you're a journalist.
You'd pick up a story of someone who ran a page that had a... And we're in the era, like, lest we forget, Catfish is on season 240 or something now. So that was probably around at the time.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, think about it. It happened on Mother's Day. She's a young, pregnant woman killed by a speeding driver. The baby survives and is delivered
safely.
What's
the name of this hip replacement woman again?
Huge story.
Even without the internet, Taryn, that's a huge story.
So if Taryn's smelling a rat, so is some other people. So what I imagine happened was Tara was scrolling through the comments and there was one person who said something like, you know, just not calling them out, just sort of maybe even I can't find, you know, this is in my town. My mum works at the hospital. I've asked her, there's nobody here. Are you sure you have the hospital name right? Something like that, you know, just to be like, okay, something is awry.
No. Yeah, she absolutely got a whiff that something was awry. Now, she doesn't. I've read interviews with her and I've read like things she's written about this. And she never mentions that there was any kind of suspicions being raised in the comments. What she was really struck by was how invested people were in this emotionally. Mm-hmm. And how worried and upset people were. Yeah. And like, there was also like charity pages set up for Warrior Eli.
Yeah.
And think two different ones.
Sorry, are we now suggesting that there's no... Okay.
So, hear me out. Yeah. Okay, so Taryn Wright felt that something was a bit off here. And there was... So she started to look into the family, all the kind of players... Of which there was many, because there was
so many children.
The couple, Dana and JS. There was their parents. There was all the kids. There
and was all the kids' WhatsApp Montessori group.
So they had loads and loads of friends. You know, like, it wasn't like when you look at a catfisher and if you just kind of take one step beyond, you know, it's pretty obvious it's a puppet account. It's only got six friends. Or do you know what I mean?
World. But how long, an ecosystem of
how
people.
Long? Where did it begin? And how
also,
long ago?
So she started to look back. She could see that there was like an entire family saga chronicled in like a decade's worth of online presence. There was like blogs, MySpace pages, family photo albums, or online. Here's one thing she initially was struck by: there was like too many kids. Too many of them were twins.
Not enough time to be doing the job you're doing and having all... Can I just say?
You were suspicious.
The whole actual family story starts to read like a soap opera. There was murders in the background here somewhere. Cases of mistaken identities. Like, this is all just in their run-of-the-mill family life online on Facebook. Like... Uncle James there. Turns out he's not even Uncle James. Like, shit like that was being discovered way back in the kind of dear family past.
As you're sort of slowly... This whole story stinks. Like, who were these millions of people buying in?
Millions of them. There was millions of them. They were all around.
What are you going to do? You're not necessarily going to go and deep dive into someone's Facebook page. If you see a post
it's
for a second, you're going to take it for Facebook.
Yeah, time and time and time and time and time again is that you get these stories that are too tragic. And
too tragic.
You feel...
It's like too good to be true and too tragic to be
fake. Or you know, but you feel like you... Who's going to be that bastard who investigates that sorry, sad tale?
Oh, yeah. Like, who's going to show up and be like, I demand to see your sick 5-year-old?
Yeah.
Also, because most of us just, like, don't sit around being like, I want to invent a sick kid. So, okay. So Wright starts taking all the family pictures and there's millions. Like, as you just described, there's like an ecosystem of content here.
But that's very like complex content.
Very complex. They've got kids of all different ages.
Exactly.
They're in family photographs together.
Exactly. And depending on age and you'd need to be tracking.
She went through JS Deer's profile into a friend, found a picture of JS and Dana and one of the sets of twins at like a barbecue. They're all tagged in this other person's account. Like, it just looks so real. So anyway, she starts like image searching.
Yes. Okay.
And links bunch of the photographs have been lifted from a South African blogger. What's more, Dana Deer.
Were they all, can I ask, were all the members of the family
Did they like
one
look?
Whole family, or would they dissecting different families like together? You know, like the human centipede. But you okay. know what I'm saying?
Like, were they possibly?
Were she were they cobbling were, like, together
yeah.
siblings?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Were they
or
possibly
was this
made up? Like, were some cousins? Was it like a little village?
Yeah,
yeah. Takes the village.
Takes a village.
It takes the village. Here's the twins at their birthday party.
Let's have a look.
Right.
Okay. They look like bog standard twins
I'd
at a birthday
see,
party.
Like most
little kids,
now,
they're like at their seventh birthday party there, probably.
If you uploaded but if you were by suspicious their dad, of JS. Someone, right, and you were suspicious of their story, and you went on and you saw there were 12 Facebook accounts for the people of this family, there was friends of friends, they were tagged in other people's photos, you'd be like, ah, weird. They're legit, though, as far as I'm concerned.
What? Good question. Stop. What makes you go further?
Yeah.
What made her go further?
Like
all
also,
the time on her hands.
It so is bizarre, but
there's so much. The pictures, I think, were brought from lots of different sources in answer to that question. Yeah. JS, the dad, also had this like big Yahoo's Answers account. Like, it's so funny because some of this stuff is like real old internet stuff, or not old, but like, you know, MySpace blog and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And like on the Yahoo, on his Yahoo Answers account, like he fielded questions from parents of cancer patients looking for emotional support, like needing advice on how to advocate for their sick family member, even down to asking how much to pay a babysitter.
Okay, Bill, who is this person? Why? What's the motive? What are we talking about here?
Wait, there's like legit, there's pictures of chemotherapy drugs there.
I feel sick. Tell me what's
these
going
are,
on.
Sorry, obviously
and
people
we should share
these
on Tall Tales Instagram, actually. But there's also, this is some of the care packages that
people
I was talking about
sending.
With the Warrior Eli wristbands. And then look.
Where are they sending?
Like, there's a little bit of like 5-year-old Warrior Eli's artwork.
I feel
are
ill. Can you just tell
these
me?
These are handwritten notes.
These are hand-drawn.
People
drawn.
Can't see them. They're hand
this
drawn
is a little
pictures.
Car.
This
there's
stuff
clouds.
People are sending to yeah. Eli.
I'm trying to zoom in enough to read. There's little clouds above and little words in the clouds.
And
I mean, this looks like the stuff I have on my own wall at home.
But
like.
These are just pictures that you would take on your phone and upload really...
But ha-
okay.
Is
so
it
very authentic
Wright
looking.
Got like the scent of blood. In her nose, and she was like, I'm
"Oh,
getting
I would
to the bottom
I would
of
take
this.
That to the cleaners
and actually,
myself, depending on the time." I
The care packages were the weak link.
There, I knew there was going to be something. You know the way there's like one thing.
Well, you
you're
just
like, gotcha.
Need something physical.
Gotcha.
That is what you need.
Yeah,
because everything is in the ether on the internet.
So come on.
So
spill.
The physical thing was that these had to be posted from somewhere. So there was a return address. So she started to get in touch online with people, started to make her concerns known. And then
surely they
all
were getting
of a sudden,
an address to send this stuff
her,
to.
Yeah, but a return address. There was a return address on these packages.
Sorry,
but
is
anyway,
Eli
so,
sending this out or are they receiving it for Eli?
No, they're sending it to people.
Sorry.
Yeah,
okay,
sorry, I didn't make
yeah,
that clear.
No, no, no.
That was coming from the dears to their supporters, like in thanks.
There's a return
but
address.
Because like, they're all donating money and
yeah,
stuff.
Yeah, that's
like
what
that.
I was ask. Is there a financial benefit here for the family?
Well, there was two charity pages set up in the name of Warrior
How
Eli.
How much were they raking in?
I don't have figures on that, but yes, there is money. Like... Here is a screen grab of donations.
And people commenting,
and people
wishing
commenting
all the best.
And so saying, this is like, is this
Eli, you're our hero. Bless you, little man, for teaching us about courage and faith. In loving memory, oh, this is so sad. This is a person donating
in memory of their own child.
$15 in loving memory of Caleb Larson, Ethan Josted, Layla Grace, Faith, and many more. I mean, that is really Jesus.
So he was accepting these donations.
So there is, I mean, the highest donation here is $33.
Doesn't matter.
And the rest are like 20 quid.
It's total evilness. So hold on.
And so, right. So Taryn Wright had started to kind of talk a bit about her suspicions on blogs.
Okay.
And then like she started to get emails from other people who had, as you said, maybe started to like have a little bit of suspicions. That's when she figured out that all the care boxes that had gone out had a return address of a house that, of a house that.
Can I ask you a quick question?
Yeah.
Returning address is something they write on the box.
Is that, well, okay, I don't know if a return address in is like optional, I think, in Ireland. I'm not sure. Maybe they have to.
Oh, yeah, it is. Yeah, you can send like.
Yeah, so you write it on the back of an envelope.
You can if you want.
Yeah.
You don't have to.
You don't have
but
to.
Maybe why would they? It came from like a post. Maybe it came from the post.
Well, there would be a tracking system whereby they could tell which post office it was posted from.
Yeah.
Yeah, but they didn't even need that. Like they could see that it was posted from Ohio.
Yeah.
So sorry. Fuck.
Did he write his address or her address on the box?
Yeah. Wow. Emily Dear, Rootstown, Ohio.
That's all, nothing more.
Yes. And now.
So vague, not at house number.
Emily Dear.
Yeah. Emily Dear, same last name as the family.
Oh, Taryn Wright. Who's Emily?
Well, so Taryn Wright found an Emily Dear, all right, on one of these donation pages and found that Emily Dear had donated money in 2013. She'd donated $20, left no message. Mm-hmm. And Taryn Wright writes that she thought it was just a coincidence at the time,
okay,
because who would use their own last name when creating such a vast spoofing con?
Yeah.
Surely no one's that
silly,
evil, stupid. Anyway, then people started contacting her and saying that the return address is Emily Dear, Rootstown, Ohio. Then, right, JS said that Emily was actually his sister who lived in the United States and that handling...
Where are they proposing to be? I missed the start. Is this, where is the family based? Or
in Saskatchewan, in
Saskatchewan,
Canada.
Oh, sorry, you forgot that. Yeah.
So
I just still put them in America. I was like, classically American.
Fucking American.
So anyway, he was basically saying that postage was cheaper from Ohio than it was from Saskatchewan and that Emily, his sister, was in charge of sending them all out.
Okay legit story. Fine. This family's busy. It's got 10 kids. One's a surgeon.
One's sick. Yeah, they've sick got child. Up to their...
Yes,
yeah. You'd expect.
Taryn Wright did a search of public records, and that revealed that the house
she went deep
was actually
she should come on this
belonging
podcast.
To the parents of Emily Dear.
Sorry, what? So
Emily
there's a house
Dear
name on this
isn't
address.
Old enough to own a house.
Emily Dear is like 12, is she?
Well,
sorry, what are we talking about here?
Emily Dear, who's sending out these care packages from Ohio on the behalf of the Dear family, who have 10 children and a sick child.
Yeah.
Who JS is claiming to be his sister in Ohio, looking after all the packaging, is in fact a very young person. A young person living with her parents
she
in
She still
Ohio,
lives at home with her parents.
According to our sleuthy friend.
Taryn Wright.
Okay. That's catching everyone up.
That was brilliant.
Thank you.
Thank you. That was a really good recap because it does get really kind of complex. Doesn't it keep going? So, Taryn Wright confronted Emily and basically said, like,
who are you? What's going on?
Who are you? What is going on? Is this just all bullshit?
How did she contact her?
She contacted her. I know that she definitely had a phone conversation with her.
Right.
I don't know if the initial contact was email, but I know that they had a phone conversation. Also, Taryn Wright did kind of like quite an interesting move and published her name, like, I think potentially before anything was kind of confirmed.
Okay.
Then.
So Taryn Wright had kind of presumably built up a little bit of a following about this on her own blog.
Like,
and that was gaining traction as well.
Yeah. Yes, exactly. And then, so Emily emailed, sorry, actually it does say it here. Emily emailed Taryn Wright first, spinning yet another ridiculous lie. And then eventually she called her and they had a conversation and she confessed to the whole thing. The whole thing being that none of those people exist.
No one.
The surgeon Dana doesn't exist.
No, it's total
JS
fabrication.
Warrior Eli.
Who is Emily and what the fuck was she doing? Age is Emily?
Emily's going to be really young because I feel like someone who believes that you can have 10 children and be a surgeon.
Teenage girl territory. And also to be young enough to know not to cover your track or call them after you, your name.
And to have your name on the postal box.
And to have, exactly, return address that she put on there. Silly girl.
Silly okay. girl.
How
so?
Did it happen? How did it all?
This is a real, like, you said, I could before nearly you started. Imagine this happening to you, Jen, or me. So basically, Emily started when she was 11.
What? Started this when she was 11?
She started working on this.
Oh my God.
This is a quote from Taryn Rice.
It just went too far.
Website, warriorelihoax.com. Speaking of Emily, Taryn writes, she expressed a lot of remorse about the situation. It started out when she was very young, 11.
Wow.
And it obviously snowballed out of control.
Right, I'm getting sympathy now for Emily, are you?
As an escape for some sad situations in her own life.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, that is, like
that's the work of a child.
That's the imagination of a child who has built a fictitious, happy, giant family around her.
Okay. But it started when she was 11. It didn't conclude until she was 22 and cornered.
Oh, fuck. Right. So this kept going until she was 20.
But this person is not well.
No, not well. I totally agree with that.
I think it's very important she started this journey as a child.
Yes. So she I can has see how it
went along.
To whom I have deeply hurt.
Oh God.
I'm deeply sorry for all the pain I've caused everyone. It was never my intention to do so. This all started 11 years ago when I was a bored 11-year-old kid looking for an escape from the pain and heartache I saw in my own family. It started out almost as a fiction writing, but the more time I spent escaping into it, the more real it became, quote unquote real. I'm so sorry it hurt so many real families and so many people out there.
I'm swinging back around again. I'm feeling
her. She goes on now, though, she's spinning something here in the next paragraph. Okay. Let's just see what we think. Okay. She says, after several years of writing, I thought I could do some good with my writing. I had read stories of children fighting pediatric cancer and thought I could raise awareness for these kids.
Bullshit. That's nonsense.
Well, it's an after the fact.
Well, it's an accidental potential good that came from a big load of shit. Well, it's
yes.
Well, it's also suggesting that this was her intention all
exactly,
along.
Which is completely, yeah. Well, no, she does say after a few years she thought she could do some good.
Bollocks.
It's all a justification for continuing on, basically. On longer than after she should have known better kind of thing.
God, it's so evil.
Also, though, interestingly, every penny did go to the charities of the two pages she set up. So this was never monetary, as we've seen before.
Never it is.
With
it is never,
Samantha Oazapadi.
Weird no, and amazingly as wrong, remember.
With, as with...
Our 9/11 hoaxer.
9/11 hoaxer.
Yeah. So this... She said this was never about personal gain for me. It was an escape. And then once it was no longer an escape, it was for me trying to raise awareness and funding for pediatric cancer, although it was completely in the wrong way. Look, yes, it was. Yes. She does say, I am not mentally ill. We all make mistakes, some such as mine more grave than others. If I could take back the years of writing, using others' photos, I would in a heartbeat. When I get up in the morning, I'll be removing every page I created. It's way past time for me to move on and do something good without harming others in the process. I'm truly sorry to each of the families I've hurt. I would urge you to continue to support ALSF. They have no part in this and they deserve as much support as they can. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So
I'm She's not the worst. She's not the worst we've heard. She isn't.
No, but you know she's what she is? She worst. Is one of the most dedicated, I think.
Absolutely. Because,
so what am I, her personas, like numbered in the 70-something different Facebook pages in the end.
But she was working on this for 11 years.
So like, this was like an opus of catfishing.
That's the length of time.
That's what to me... suggests that this was a very lonely, isolated person. I know she said she's not mentally ill, but someone who's desperately seeking a world and creating a world for herself.
Yeah, I don't think we're talking about mental illness here. This is the fantasies of a child And then sort of an addiction to this world that she felt so in control.
It's a total addiction because obviously she was giving an addiction to all the responses she was getting
and all the emoting.
Yeah, they're real responses. They're real feelings that she's experiencing. Real high she's getting, obviously people liking and engaging.
I think that there's like a real lapse in empathy because she obviously can't compute that those are real feelings on the other end of this too. Yeah. That as much as she's really feeling this, those people that have reached out or are getting support from her or giving her support, that's like they're doing a real emotional labor and stuff.
But think of the what the subject we're talking about here. This is she couldn't pull the plug on this as easy as one of our other spoofers necessarily. When you're talking about a community of parents with sick children,
they could have disappeared.
She could have turned off the internet. This is my argument for just turn it off. She couldn't possibly have understood in her early teens.
No, you're right.
The extent of those feelings, and I don't, and even the idea,
even
of
at 22,
empathy, of how affecting that would be for people or how triggering it would be for people.
But it had gotten so big.
Yeah, but I think she was just, it was just like your sympathy one. And she was, that was, she went to the darkest, saddest thing she could find to gain that sympathy.
Because she was embodying a few different, like a lot of whose voice did she use for the most part? Who did you hear from? Was it the mother?
J.S. or
the father? Seems to be quite dominant. Okay. But obviously that's because when Taryn Wright started to really pay attention, Dana was already dead.
Okay.
But before that, it's but kind before of this that very loving mother figure who has all of these children.
Yes.
Okay.
It's really interesting. So I read a lot around all of this because obviously, so there's Munchausen's by proxy that is a really famous mental disorder that I think it was like the phrase, like the naming of it was coined in the 50s. And that is when mothers pretend their children are sick or they actually make them sick for attention and to get kind of validated and gratification from all the attention and support that they're getting because of their sick child. So now they are trying to get Munchausen's by internet
recognized
in the DSM. And it is interesting because, like, obviously, like, catfishing isn't like a clinical term, but this thing is, you know,
is
like,
it not?
It's an epidemic.
Kind of relatable in that, is it not part of the human condition already? Like, the kind of, first of all, looking for escapism if your situation you find yourself in is pretty bleak.
Mm.
Then trying to find in others something you're lacking in your own. I mean, it's not, for me, in my head, it's not wildly, but I think
it's very normal when you're a child and you're at that age to, you know, when you're young and you tell everyone that you went down to Wexford and you got the shift.
Yes.
You know, but like it's very normal at that age to make up stories because you're craving something, validation or approval and everybody or whatever, does that. Or attention.
The internet didn't exist then.
Yes. And that's why we had parameters that ended those stories.
Absolutely.
And we had, you know, it was easy to, in some ways it was very easy to get away with them because no one was going to go down to Wexford and try and find the guy or whatever.
Of course not.
And then it just faded out and it's fine. You didn't have to continue on because it would just drift in. But like
now
this child needs to create more and more and more and more lies to validate the lies that she had told before.
And you know,
and it just snowballed.
At the time that this happened, we weren't as computer and social media literate as we are now. So in fact, it's becoming less, you're going to be able to do this less. So there was a period of time at the
kind of golden age
that you could be anonymous.
It was super easy to
but
do.
But I think that the online yarns are just going to become more complex. People are going to find ways
and younger and younger people will be able to cover their tracks and be more anonymous and, you know.
Yeah, it's like everyone knows now the things that can get them caught. The reverse image searching, the whatever.
But I think if you're emoting online and if you're involved in a community online, do you not have some
thing wrong with your
Well, you have to have some personal responsibility in that you don't know these people you're talking to. You don't.
Yeah.
Do you know?
But you don't have enough face-to-face interaction with people to understand empathy. You don't.
What do you mean now?
Because like you, there's so many social cues and emotions that we develop just by pure peer-to-peer contact.
Yes.
And if, I mean, young people, I think it was reported in the, it was like a report from Think House there that on average, say 10 years ago, young people met their peers, it's like 2.75 times a week outside school. And now it's dropped to like 1.4. Like it's nearly halved the amount of real life interaction. But people are talking more virtually with each other. But that is going to impact how they develop. It's a very... You know, you can't read social cues. You can't read personal feelings.
Why though?
You know, you can't read people's tone.
You know that, and we know that.
Mm.
And we're the people involved in this community. We're adults. What my argument here is that.
Do you know what I'm saying?
Like, I feel like those people involved, grieving, pain, people in pain, looking for an outlet and a community.
Yeah.
We're aware and should have maybe more
that they
so.
Can't feel this wronged because they
absolutely on that hand, but also the people you think you're talking to, you know, we all know.
I know, look, to be honest, it's a little bit alien to me. I don't talk to people on the internet that much.
I was really
there is people that really,
into,
really do
MSN and chat groups when I was a teenager in a major way. Mm. Like my parents disconnected the internet because they felt I was way too addicted to this. And I was. And I was trolling people on there. And I had various different personalities on there. And different chat rooms, you know, were different topics, like on Reddit.
Yeah.
And one chat room I was really embedded in. And I got to a stage in there where I really felt like these people were my friends, right?
Yeah.
Genuinely. And I feel I knew them and we were talking about similar topics. And I was really like connecting.
Yeah.
And I think it was probably around that time that my mum pulled the plug on it.
Yeah.
And I sort of came out of like a dream.
So you were really like sucked in there.
And I was like, and looking back now, and it was immediate, the disconnect. And I was like, fuck yeah, this is madness. I don't
know
who those
fucking
people were.
But you can understand if someone doesn't have someone there.
To pull the
them,
fucking plug.
How
yes,
much
I can
deeper
understand
it can
that.
Go down.
Yeah,
sure,
yeah.
Sure. I mean, yeah, actually, yeah.
There's loads of different facets to this one. Because a few of the different things I read around it also talked about how cancer is portrayed in like kind of contemporary terms.
Okay.
And how like it's like often really positioning the sufferer as like battling it.
Yeah, warrior.
Hero. Like, you know, triumphing. And like none of this, by the way, is in any way to do with anyone who has cancer.
Yeah.
Like,
but there is that portrayal as like the modern tragic hero.
Yes. Okay. And like things like the Fault in Our Stars book.
Yeah.
My like, Sister's Keeper.
Yes. There's things that
what's
are
that
kind
one
of
with
that's
Mandy
Jodie
Moore.
Pickle's book.
Mandy Moore. Oh, you're
A Walk
right.
to Remember.
Yes, very good.
There was like a lot of like media kind of.
She dies, that one.
Good on her.
Yeah. There was a lot of media kind of like romanticizing, verging on romanticizing, like what is actually fucking punishing illness. And it definitely, I think, has captured people in a really weird, strange way. Like there's almost an attraction about it.
Is there like a trending?
Like I know that's weird to say, but that's what I think what I'm kind of trying to say.
Well,
it's
you
weird.
Are. We just
well,
listed off three or four films that
but
were all around
the
same.
Here's an interesting side story that happened the same year.
Whitewashed cancer, yeah.
So it was later in 2012. And Taylor Swift wrote a song dedicated to a three-year-old boy who died of neuroblastoma, right?
Gosh.
And she had taken words written by his mother on her blog that she'd started to help weather like that tragedy.
Yeah.
And after the song was released on iTunes, dozens of blogs by mothers with dying children started popping up. Many of them actually written by Swift-obsessed high school students.
Oh, for fuck's sake.
Hoping to get their idol's attention with a tragic story of their
own. Oh, God. Well, you know, I don't think that's, you know, that is just a symptom, I think, of it being a stage in your life. And that's not evil. It's just you know, I mean, naivety. It's naivety.
It's just, I think it's just a marker of like the time we're living in. Like Munchausen's by proxy was obscure. Yeah. You know, 50 years ago. Now everyone knows about it.
Yeah.
And now Munchausen's by internet is like...
But hang on. There's real individual being harmed in Munchausen's by proxy.
Yeah.
There isn't a real life human being harmed. There was no sick kid.
Well, sometimes. I mean, no, on the internet.
So
no,
Munchausen's
no.
by internet. So I agree that there's probably a term better than catfish, but not as extreme as that.
As Munchausen
that's going
by
on,
internet.
You know? And it... It's just, but the thing is, it's so common and it existed in our teenage years. And like we've talked about this before, people like exactly like your first shift in Wexford. It's the same exact thing.
Yeah,
I don't think it's
a
symptom.
It does take a very different.
No, I think you're trying
to
normalize it too
up,
much, Chet. Like, I'm sorry about whatever happened to you in the chat room when you're a teenager, but like,
but you
71 Facebook profiles. Each with like hundreds of friends themselves. It's not.
I don't think it's an illness.
Can I? I disagree. I think that there's something, there's like, it's pathological.
Okay.
Pathologically
lying.
Yeah.
Yeah, I do.
But as in like, it's
I
a
think
compulsion.
It's,
like
it's
this
a
person
like
did
addiction.
It for 11 years. Imagine how much that dominated her life.
Yeah.
Massively. Like, the real Emily Dear, like if all of this is to believe, there's some there's some contention around like what's actually fact about Emily Dear's life, but she appears to have been a medical student for at least a year.
Oh, so she had background.
And that's how
so
she
knew the lingo.
Pictures, for example,
oh, God.
Of medication and stuff.
Well,
like
that puts an interesting swing
relevant.
On it because
so
if she's there watching
the
real life suffering and mimicking it.
Yes, exactly.
That
and
is
she
sick.
Also has the intellect to get into medicine in college. Yeah. Like, imagine if you actually turned that to something useful.
Well, it's like Bloggers Unveiled. It's an incredibly complex...
That's giving Bloggers Unveiled way too much credit.
But it is. It was pretty complex and took a lot of time. It's like, you know, when you go into, I don't know, you know, in the movies, you see somebody tracking a murder and their walls are plastered with connections.
Oh, yeah. The murder wall.
Exactly.
Yeah. And then they've got the, like... The dark room in the
Whopper
corner.
Stories.
Yeah,
but wait, no, just to like round us off, like just to take us back, actually. So the Warrior Eli hoax basically became a team of online sleuths.
Yeah,
like Taryn Wright ended up kind of being the leader of this community now.
Yeah,
and
they
investigated many of the blogs.
Oh, the Taylor Swifties.
Oh. Had done,
brilliant.
So they didn't reveal the information about those hoaxers. Because
well, there you go.
Is there
an argument to say that the internet sort of polices itself? And it
sort
of
does.
Sometimes
it does, and then sometimes
not
people
well
commit suicide. So I don't think it polices itself well enough. Sorry, not to go. It's
no.
just I just listened to the last days of August.
I feel like you've all come around to my turn off the internet.
Turn off
argument.
The internet. But wait, I have to tell you, right? So then I was researching all this and stuff, I came across an old Gawker piece and I was like, what does Gawker have to say about this?
Whoa.
I mean, obviously it's not around anymore, but I had to go and get the tea off Gawker. Fake Worlds Collide is the headline. Woman posed as a boy to seduce a minor.
Oh, yeah,
then helped
this.
Solve an online cancer hoax.
Oh, she was part of the...
No, go on. What has... I keep forgetting
I remember
her
this
name.
In the news.
Okay, so...
Are you branching into another story?
No, I'm not. This is all still very interwoven into that story. So of the kind of crew in the group that were investigating the hoax, there was a very outspoken... unusual character named Father James Puryear. According to the Facebook profile, he was a 16-year-old single father who hoped to become a preacher.
Well, that's fucking bullshit. A 16-year-old single dad.
Yeah, who wanted to become a preacher.
Is that...
It's all quite outlandish. He was the one who found... an old photo book at account of the Dears, which obviously had like loads and loads of all the collected photos. He was really invested in the group of investigators. He was shocked and horrified that anyone would pretend to be someone else online. But in the first week, when the group's members started introducing themselves, he posted this really big, long spiel. This is a quote from him, and now triggery content here. I was raped when I was this age. Then I had a kidnapping, and then my twin did this.
As kidnapping and a twin.
As Wright says, just like every kind of red flag, all in one post. So then she asked per year for pictures of his kids. And he sent a photo of a child wearing a Halloween mask. And
he could Wright just send said, a photograph of himself.
I don't really believe this is your child. And then there was no more pictures forthcoming. So then she got pissed off and booted him out of the group because she was super suspicious.
Yeah.
Then, barely 2 weeks later, Father James Puryear turned out to be 24-year-old Massachusetts woman Carissa Hatz, who was arrested in West Virginia and later pled guilty to posing as Puryear in order to have sex with a 15-year-old girl she had been talking to internet for over a year. So that's where I'm going to conclude that tale of catfishing within catfishing.
Very good.
It was the interstellar.
Do you know what's good about it? It's good because she was a child when it began. So there's some, it's interesting.
There's some sort of.
There's a clawback there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
For me, anyway.
If she's to be believed.
Thank you, Sos. That was whopper. I'm going to be dreaming about that tonight.
Yeah, that has.
I never heard it before, did you?
No.
Funny enough, I was going to text you and say, I'll say a name and you tell me without Googling it if you think this is too famous.
You can't ever do that to me because I will, Google it.
You think it's too famous? I don't think that's...
My instant reaction when you started telling the story was I wanted to pick up my phone and Google it.
This is a real Cassie story. I'm surprised you took this. I'm surprised you sort of hadn't.
This is the kind of thing that I live for, but I'm getting more and more concerned. Like, I'm getting...
We started the creep type for
it. I'm getting just so creeped out by the internet of late.
I'm excited for more.
I know.
I feel like we got into our swing this. Although I didn't hear from you.
I commented quite a bit.
I think, I'm excited for next. Thanks for listening.
Thanks for listening. Follow all the Creep Dive goings on at Tall Tales Podcast on Instagram. And maybe we'll put up some pickies from this story there.
Yeah, we will.
Also, if you are listening and you want us to deep dive into something.
Oh, yeah. To send us over tips if you want. You can DM them to Tall Tales Podcast.
You can DM them or you can send them to hello@talltales.ie.
Or just say hi.
You can shape them into a roughly 2,500 word doc. All the details. Any of your pithy takes, one of us will just read it.
That's how it goes.
Save us the legwork.
We have a whole team of researchers putting together these stories. We're just the face of
or
the
I could just tell you something I half remember that someone else remembered.
You can just come and tell us.
I'll shout out my sources if I may. So warriorelihoax.com is Taryn Wright's website. Also gawker.com referenced. And WashingtonPost.com.
She's getting all professional.
This is just where I go. I read all these books. And TheGuardian.com.
Not say, oh, there's something I remember and I cross-reference.
Look, we've all got our skills. We're all bringing different things to the table.
The thing to know is your strengths.
Correct.
And what are your strengths, Jen?
Tits.
I know. You just went straight for them, touching-wise. Okay. Bye.
Bye.
Bye.